News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, we have a live interview with Guatemalan human rights activist Jesus Tico Osorio, speaking on issues facing indigenous peoples in Guatemala. But first, we have this headline produced by Paul Kotheimer on the weekend's activities across the world. Chicago Indie Media estimates that the 8 to 12 million people who demonstrated worldwide in opposition to the impending war on Iraq on Saturday constitute the single largest mobilization against war in history. Here are just a few reports from over 600 actions which took place in cities around the globe. In Auckland, Australia, a march of 8 to 10,000 people was led by an Iraqi nun and a samba band. In Budapest, Hungary, about 3,000 people gathered to form a peace chain across the River Donau. At Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, dozens of activists donned white jumpsuits and powder blue helmets and marched to the gates of the U.S. Naval Base to demand a weapons inspection. Jugglers for Peace, on stilts and in glitzy outfits, walked among the crowd of about 600 in Hilo, Hawaii. In Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, demonstrators carried a banner which read, "Drop Bush, not Bombs." In Sarajevo, a city still scarred by Bosnia's civil war of 1992 to 1995, around 500 protesters marched on the U.S. Embassy to mark their opposition to the conflict. In the Bosnian city of Mostar, about 100 Muslims and Croats united for an anti-war protest, the first such cross-community action in 7 years, in a place where ethnic divisions here remain tense since the 1995 Bosnian peace agreement. Quote, "We want to say that war is evil and that we who survived one know that better than anyone," end quote, said Maja Hadzik, 54. In Vancouver, British Columbia, banners reading "Stop Mad Cowboy Disease" were raised alongside this quote from Albert Einstein: "I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones." That is the headline from Paul Kotheimer. We don't have a lot of headlines today because we have a live interview and we don't have a lot of time. Our interviewee is Guatemalan human rights activist Jesus Tico Osorio, accompanied by Jessica Popovac, who will translate, Meredith Cruz, the executive director of the Illinois Disciples Foundation, which is hosting Jesus this evening at 7 p.m. for a talk entitled "Building Alternatives in Guatemala," will be conducting the interview, and I'll turn this over to her.
Okay. I feel very honored to be able to interview Jessica and Jesus this evening, and I know Jessica can do a better introduction to her work and the work of Jesus than I can, so I'm just going to start out by getting right into the interview and asking Jessica to talk a little bit about the work of Rights Action, which is the human rights organization that she's with in Guatemala.
Hi, Meredith. Thank you. We're very happy to be here, Jesus and I. And I'm working with Rights Action, which is a Canadian NGO with offices in Toronto and Washington, D.C. and Guatemala City. And what we do is we support popular organizations, popular movements, and community and indigenous associations throughout Central America, but mostly in Guatemala. And we support them both with funding for projects, for organizing and things of that nature, and then also with advocacy work, trying to raise awareness about the issues that they're facing in the international community. And also, you know, we do that through writing articles, urgent actions and things of that nature, but then also through trying to kind of build links between activists in Central America and activists here in the States. And the speaking tour that Jesus and I are on right now is part of that.
Okay. Maybe you could give a little bit of an introduction to Jesus and his story. I know right now everyone's attention is focused on Iraq, and we're forgetting that violence continues to happen all around the world, especially in Guatemala. So I'll just let you talk a little bit about Jesus's story.
Okay. Yeah, it has been a weird time to travel with, you know, with the message of human rights and impunity, ending impunity in Guatemala because of the whole Iraq thing. But it's also been very relevant for that reason, because Guatemala is a country where U.S. foreign policy has played a huge role in bringing Guatemala to where it is right now, unfortunately. And it's a place where we have focused very little attention on the peace process. And that's one of the things that Jesus is going to be talking about. Basically, Guatemala suffered, for those who might not be as aware with Guatemalan history, Guatemala suffered one of the bloodiest and most horrific wars in recent history in this hemisphere. And it was supported through funds, training, and arms by the U.S. military in the context of the Cold War. The Guatemalan military was found themselves faced with a huge left-wing insurgency. The guerrillas in the mostly rural areas, which it's a bit of a simplification to say so, but they, to the large extent, were fighting for indigenous rights and for land reform, for socioeconomic reforms. And what happened, unfortunately, during the early 80s, when this war was at its climax, was 200,000 people were killed, and 86% of those people were indigenous Mayans. And because of this, and 93% of what happened in Guatemala, 93% of the violence was state-sponsored. So because of this, the UN Historical Clarification Commission has said flat out that what happened in Guatemala constitutes an act of genocide. Jesus is a survivor of this period of violence. His community found themselves not only targeted because they were indigenous, because they were in a rural area which was seen as supporting an area that was, you know, supporting the guerrilla movement, but also because there was a large hydroelectric dam being built near their community, a dam which incidentally was funded by the World Bank and being built by a state-run operation. Now, what the World Bank was doing, funding a military dictatorship that was committing genocide, has yet to be decided. But basically, the people didn't want to move. They were given a very poor resettlement plan they were offered, and they rejected it. And instead of then entering into negotiations and taking the issue to the legal arena, the military and the paramilitaries came in and committed a series of four massacres in Jesus' community. The only reason that he didn't die was because one of the paramilitaries who was involved that day didn't have a son and wanted to bring someone home with him to work his land for him. And so he brought Jesus home with him, and Jesus was then forced to live working as this man's slave for a period of 2 years until his sister found out he was alive and then fought for custody. Then when Jesus came of age, because he had seen all these things, because he had lived with these men, he was able to point out where the mass graves were and point out who committed these crimes and initiate legal proceedings, which eventually put three of these paramilitaries in jail. And this is unprecedented in Guatemala. The vast majority of crimes committed during the war enjoy a complete impunity, to the extent that the people who were in charge, the same political party, is now currently still running Guatemala, unfortunately. However, Jesus, in this society that is very much orchestrated in a way as to instill great fear among the people so that they don't organize and don't speak out, Jesus was able to do so and was able to achieve justice. And he won a human rights award for that eventually, and with that money he was able to start a scholarship foundation for other Maya Achi children in the area, for the descendants of the victims of the violence. He also has started a legal clinic for witnesses. He has started, he's been one of the co-founders for a cultural museum, which preserves the memory of the victims, as well as elements of the culture and traditions of the Maya Achi people. And he is currently involved in the genocide case against General Riosman and Lucas Garcia, who were the intellectual authors of these horrible crimes, which he'll talk more about tonight. So, basically,
it's kind of a miracle that
in
he's
a nutshell.
Here.
I know, when I was listening to him speak today and realizing that it was only because his sister found out he was alive and then was able to locate and get him out of the situation of being enslaved by the paramilitary that he's even here to bring forth this story and have mm-hmm. his testimony. So since it is such a miracle, why don't we ask him some questions and let his voice come through? Maybe you could ask him a little bit about, there's going to be some translation, so have the listeners please hold with us. What his goals are as far as the speaking tour. I know you guys have been talking in different places for 3 weeks prior to this, and you're going to mm-hmm. continue afterwards. Why he's motivated to continue and his purpose and goal for being in the United States.
¿Podría hablar un poco sobre sus objetivos con esta gira?
Sí. Bueno, los objetivos que estamos buscando con esta gira, principalmente, más que apoyo económico y apoyo político. Durante el año 2000 y 2001 se presentó denuncia de genocidio en contra de Lucas García y Ríos Montt, que son los dos gobiernos que han tenido Guatemala, los dos gobiernos que es los más peores que han tenido Guatemala. Entonces, para ayudar un poco las autoridades en Guatemala para con relación a la investigación, es importante a través de varios ciudadanos norteamericanos pedir al gobierno de este país desclasificar todas las informaciones sobre los derechos humanos en Guatemala.
Okay, the main objective we are looking for in this tour is principally more than just economic support. We're also looking for political support. In the years 2000 and 2001, we were able to present a denouncement of genocide against Lucas Garcia and General Ríos Montt, the heads of two of the worst administrations that Guatemala has seen in terms of human rights abuses. And what we need is that people here in the U.S. and in the international community support the Guatemalan authorities who are working on these cases, and that they go a step further to push the U.S. to declassify all of the information that they have in the National Security Archives to help along the investigation of the genocide case.
Mm-hmm. And maybe he could talk a little bit about the situation for people working for human rights in Guatemala today. I know part of what you do is accompaniment work, because exactly what Jesus said, if there isn't international eyes on the situation, you know, it is a system of corruption and people will be killed. And I think that some people thought after the peace accords were signed in 96 that everything was taken care of. And I know Witness for Peace pulled their office out of Guatemala and a lot of attention was placed elsewhere, but that things continue to be somewhat difficult today. So since he's fighting in Guatemala currently, and we don't want people to forget about what's going on, if you could ask him about that.
Para defensores de derechos humanos, ataques, amenazas, y por qué es importante sí. tener la presencia internacional.
Bueno, el año pasado y este año también, en Guatemala se incrementó las amenazas, principalmente en contra de los activistas de derechos humanos, en contra de sindicatos y estudiantes que están luchando para tener un país justo. Y no solo a las amenazas, sino que en Guatemala actualmente está viviendo una época muy difícil. Diariamente, día y noche, aparecen personas asesinadas. Y el gobierno de nuestro país no tiene la capacidad para responder a la delincuencia, y es preocupante porque siempre los que sufren las consecuencias son las personas trabajadoras del país.
Last year, as well as this year in Guatemala, threats and acts of intimidation directed towards human rights workers, labor union leaders, and students who are struggling to have a more just country have increased dramatically. And it isn't only threats against these kinds of human rights workers, but more than that, Guatemala is suffering a very difficult period because of a huge rise in crime recently. Every day and night, there are more people being murdered, and the Guatemalan government doesn't have the capacity and doesn't prioritize responding to these issues, and it's very worrisome because this affects the working class.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting for Jesus to talk about economic violence and the FTAA and CAFTA. I know that Witness for Peace could bring, and other organizations working for human rights in Guatemala, were able to bring attention to the situation because there was overt physical violence in the 80s, and you could see pictures of people who had been victims of massacres. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, what is the situation? Are people dying because of diarrhea, preventable diseases? And how does economics play into the continued repression?
I think that might be a better question for myself.
Okay, go ahead.
Because Jesus Moore, you know, is working on justice issues at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
But the new free trade agreements, in a climate where impunity runs rampant and where there are so many attacks against people who organize for indigenous rights, for labor rights, for environmental regulations, to talk about free trade in the context in which it is currently discussed is ludicrous, because there is no free trade when basic human rights and environmental standards and things of this nature are so profoundly ignored in a country such as Guatemala. And not only that, but right now with the Plan Pueblo Panama, which is a plan to try to develop the infrastructure throughout Central America to try to facilitate the movement of goods and the exploitation of natural resources and all of this, the Plan Pueblo Panama is going to necessitate the displacement of huge, vast numbers of indigenous people along the isthmus, the Central American isthmus, and you know, in an effort to try to rape the land of all of its resources that they haven't tapped into, you know, for many reasons. For the largest problem there is that just that they don't have the economic ability and the infrastructure to do it in a way that would allow them to still live on the land and still live the lives that they have traditionally lived in their community and in on their land. But basically, this is seen as a necessary step in the neoliberal development model, that the displacement of indigenous people is kind of a necessary evil. And, you know, and it's easy for us to talk about and think, oh, but, well, they can move to the cities and there'll be more jobs and factories and things of that nature. But to people such as Jesus and people who live in these small communities where community is everything, where, you know, contact with nature is everything, it isn't that simple. And not only that, but when they don't want to leave, this is what happened to his community before. That was a primary reason that there was such an overt act of state violence directed towards them. And, you know, and now we're living in a different time and there isn't a civil war going on in Guatemala, but it doesn't mean that there isn't still state violence and that there isn't still many acts of intimidation and attacks like the ones that he was just talking about. Mm-hmm. It's just much more subtle and directed at leaders instead of entire communities. Mm-hmm. But it still exists, and free trade is impossible, as is democracy, in that kind of a climate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe back to a question that Jesus could answer about, maybe just to hear more personal stories about the work that he does for human rights. I know he's been involved, like you said, with developing a museum to preserve the culture of his people, and he was testified in a case of genocide, and maybe what it's like to work for human rights for him personally, what gives him hope. I know he's talked about his family earlier today.
Mm-hmm. que te da fuerza y voluntad para seguir adelante?
Bueno, con relación a la lucha por los derechos humanos en Guatemala, es un poco difícil y riesgoso, porque no solo carecemos de ¿cómo se llama?, de seguridad personal, sino que también carecemos de recursos económicos. Pero para la lucha, para que ya no se repitan las masacres que tocaron vivir varios guatemaltecos, entonces nos han obligado a seguir luchando, pedir justicia por todo lo que pasó.
In relation to the struggle for human rights in Guatemala, it is very difficult and it's very risky. Not only do human rights defenders lack a degree of personal security, but they also lack the economic resources to keep on struggling. However, the struggle is very important because it's crucial that we not repeat or not see these massacres happen again, and that many Guatemalans who have suffered and who continue to suffer will hopefully one day be free of this.
Sí, y actualmente pues hay mucha gente siempre dice de que bueno, en Guatemala ya se firmó la paz, ya todo se terminó con la guerra, pero no es así. Hoy es el mejor momento de que nos apoya para construir la paz en Guatemala. Hasta el momento siempre en varias comunidades y en varias activistas de derechos humanos hemos conseguido apoyo de otras personas como de Canadá, de los Estados Unidos, de Inglaterra, para brindar seguridad a varias activistas y también a testigos.
Now many people are saying things such as, well, they already signed the peace accords in Guatemala, there's already peace, that the war has ended, but unfortunately this isn't how things are. Right now, today, is the best moment to help defenders of human rights in Guatemala to construct the peace. And many communities and international actors have wanted to help, and we have secured a lot of support from people in England and in the U.S. and in Canada.
Sí.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he said that, and that is helping a lot, not only with the movement, but with the level of insecurity that we work mm-hmm. under.
Mm-hmm. Maybe just ask his opinion. After the peace accords were signed, how have things changed or stayed the same as far as poverty and health and education and discrimination? I know those were all part of the peace accords.
Antes y después de los acuerdos de paz, ¿cómo cambió la salud y educación?
Bueno, después de la... Bueno, antes de firmar la paz, el gobierno comprometió con la UNG hacer muchos cambios para el país, pero hasta el momento no se ve nada en concreto si el gobierno está dando cumplimiento a los acuerdos de paz. Principalmente con el sistema de educación sigue malísimo. Durante el mes de febrero en Guatemala se han paralizado todos los maestros, porque ellos mismos están dando cuenta de que no solo los maestros reciban un salario muy bajo, y sino que también en varias escuelas del país no hay útiles, no hay escritorios, no cuenta con los recursos suficientes para para trabajar los maestros. Y la única respuesta del gobierno es de que utilizó el ejército para proteger los edificios y otras cosas más. O sea, sacaron el ejército en las calles para amenazar a los maestros.
¿Están en huelga?
Sí.
Before signing the peace accords, the government made many promises with the URNG, or the URNG is a coalition of various guerrilla factions, and they made many promises with the URNG to make many changes in the country, but until now we haven't seen anything concrete to fulfill those promises. The education system is still horrible. During the month of February in Guatemala, all of the teachers went on strike for a period of time because not only do the teachers receive extremely low salaries, but in many schools there are no utilities, there are no desks, there's no political will to provide the resources necessary for the schools to operate. And the government, however, you know, continues to fund and increase its budget for the military, and now they're even using the military to threaten the teachers to stop striking.
Y también después de la firma de la paz, el gobierno comprometió de disminuir 30% del ejército, y no es así. Actualmente en mi pueblo, Rabinal, es un pueblo que estaba en el centro del país, no estaba en la frontera, pero sí contaba con un destacamento militar. Y no solo a eso, sino que también el gobierno ha incrementado el presupuesto del ejército. ¿Y por qué lo ha incrementado? Y ya estamos después de la firma de la paz, ya no hay, en Guatemala ya no hay guerras. Entonces, ¿de qué forma incrementaron el presupuesto del ejército?
After the signing of the peace accords, or included in the peace accords, was a measure to reduce military spending in Guatemala by 30%. However, this hasn't happened. Right now in Rabinal, where Jesus lives, a pueblo that's right in the center of Guatemala, it's not on the border, but yet we have a military camp there. And not only this, but and there's no reason for a military camp in the center of the country. There's no threat there. And not only this, but they have increased the military budget for the year. And there's no reason to increase it when it's supposed to be decreasing.
It's like military budgets are increasing everywhere. Okay. We are running out of time, but I do want to invite people to come to the Illinois Disciples Foundation tonight if you would like to hear more from Jesus. He also has a really incredible video about the story of his life that he'll show. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, and we're at the corner of Springfield and Wright, and I'll turn it over to Clint to wrap up the show.
Thank you for having us on.
Thank you for coming. Thanks to Jessica and Jesus and to Meredith for conducting the interview. That does wrap up this edition of IMC Radio News. If you'd like to help take part in producing this show, you can stop by for our weekly meeting at the IMC, 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana. It meets at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday evenings. You can also call 344-8820 or email radio@ucimc.org for more information. No experience is necessary, just a desire to create news that states your views. That does wrap up the show for today. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Take care.